from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Don't know much about history. That's the opening lyric of an old rock and roll song, and it seems to be the case for an overwhelming number of American students, according to recent results of what has come to be called the nation's report card. We'll find out in the hour ahead why students had their lowest proficiency scores overall in history and what the deficiencies are and what can and ought to be done. Forum is next with your calls, emails, and online questions and comments after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A nationwide test released yesterday reveals American students to be less proficient in American history than any other of the 8 tested subjects. Most of the 4th graders tested were unable to say why Abraham Lincoln was an important figure, and few high school seniors could name China as North Korea's ally fighting U.S. troops during the Korean War. From a survey of some 30,000 representative students by the National Assessment of Educational Progress, also called the nation's report card, 20% of 4th graders, 17% of 8th graders, and 12% of high school seniors demonstrated proficiency. In this morning's opening forum hour, we key in on American students and American history. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Cornelia Orr. She's executive director of the National Assessment Governing Board, the organization that administered the test. And Cornelia Orr, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I guess the place to begin here is perhaps to have our listeners understand the difference between what dictates basic understanding versus proficient versus advanced.
So the governing board has actually convened groups of educators to help us define what these are, but we have some general policy guidelines. So basic in general represents just partial mastery of the knowledge and skills that are fundamental. Proficient represents solid academic performance and a demonstrated competency over challenging subject matter. And advanced represents superior performance. So we use those three classifications across all of our tests.
And we're talking about public as well as private school students, are we not?
We are. Public and private are included, as well as charter.
And at this point, these have been fairly stagnant for the most part, these test scores. I mean, in terms of the lack of proficiency and the rather startling numbers that we're talking about in terms of the low numbers that we're seeing.
Yes, these results have been, you know, just flat, except for some slight improvements since 1984. And this year, we saw improvements at 8th grade and for low-achieving and minority students.
And those low-achieving and minority students may be doing better because of perhaps better reading skills or because they're more knowledgeable in history?
Well, it's really hard to tell and parse that out. One of our presenters at our release yesterday, Diane Ravitch, a national figure in history, did mention that she thought that was attributable to reading. But as the test really isn't designed to figure out why there was improvement, just whether it was. So if they are reading better, they're hopefully learning more history also.
Well, we're going to have Diane Ravitch on with us, or we expect to, in the course of this hour. But she has, and others have, leveled their indictment against No Child Left Behind because they feel that there's been too much emphasis on math and English and not enough on history and not enough really particularly on the kind of history that's useful as opposed to just memorization of facts that would be useful for a test. In other words, too much testing and too much No Child Left Behind. Do you see it that way?
Well, I want to address one of your questions specifically, and that is the memorization of facts. We don't try to emphasize the memorization of facts, but as you pointed out in the question about Abraham Lincoln, ask students to explain why that's important, what is critical about that element. And about 60 to 70% of our assessment includes those kinds of questions.
And eighth graders to date have been doing somewhat better, did you say?
They showed improvement since the last assessment in 2006, so 4 years previous. The fourth grade and eighth grade I'm sorry, the fourth grade and 12th grade did not show improvement, significant improvement, since 2006. We measure everything in terms of statistical significance because we don't test everyone. We test only a sample.
Well, when you say that memorization is not necessarily what you're looking for here, I was reading the executive summary, and it says teaching a history should introduce students to the process of historical inquiry and to real history, chronology, and basic information about what happened, when, and why. So that's really the underlying GERD of this test, and to a great extent, those kinds of things?
That is. Like I said, 60 to 70% of the items definitely try to get at that. And even the multiple choice items try to get at that. But that does not mean that some facts are not important, like who paired up with North Korea in the Korean War.
Yeah, that would be an important fact to know. Cornelia Orr, again, is Executive Director of the National Assessment Governing Board, the organization that administered the test that we're talking about here. And Diane Ravitch is now with us. She's Research Professor of Education at New York University, a historian of education, and was invited by the National Assessments Governing Board to review the results and has been a guest on Forum. And Diane Ravitch, glad to have you back with us.
Hi, great to speak with you, Michael.
This has been disturbing to you, hasn't it?
Well, you know, I think that there was good news and bad news. We saw, first of all, I should say that the federal tests are the best tests we have. And because they're no-stakes tests, they tend to be more reliable than most of the state tests. Meaning, when I say no stakes, no individual student ever gets a score. No teacher has their pay reduced or their pension eliminated because of these tests. And so there are no stakes attached to them. The children are chosen at random in a scientific sample. And they give us the NAEP test, as they're called, National Assessment of Educational Progress, give us a kind of a temperature reading on how we're doing in different subject areas. History has traditionally been the subject area where American kids do the worst. And this is no different here. But, you know, the other thing to bear in mind is the NAEP standards are way higher than any of the state standards are. So when you read, as I have, I saw there were many stories all over the country today about how low the scores are. And, you know, it's nothing to brag about, but proficient on NAEP, at least in my experience, and I was on their board for 7 years, proficient is a very high standard. That's basically an A to a very high B. And, you know, that's what all students should be. But, you know, the bad news here is we continue to see large areas where American kids ought to know. They ought to know what the Brown decision was about. And if they don't know the decision itself, the question gave the answer. And only 2% were able to read the question. These are seniors, to read a question about the Brown decision, and which said that separate and is unequal. And that in public education, this is intolerable. And then the question was, well, what social problem was the Brown decision meant to solve? And the answer was right there in front of them, and 2% got it right.
Yeah, I know that was of special concern to you, especially because we're talking about 12th graders soon to become voters.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, about 40% of the kids who took the test are already voters.
Yeah. Well, how much of this is tied to this decade of testing? I mean, high stakes in teaching to the test affecting curriculum. We're talking about No Child Left Behind, which goes back to 2002 and put in many people's minds, and I know you have been certainly strident about this, too much emphasis on math and reading and not on things like history.
Well, you know, I've been in the past year or two or three years one of the most outspoken critics of No Child Left Behind. What I've discovered as time goes by is we're one of the few nations that only puts an emphasis on math and reading. There was a study that came out about 10 days ago from the National Center on Education and the Economy, and it said other countries that way outperform us do not prioritize basic skills. They have a curriculum that puts equal emphasis on the arts and science and history and philosophy and all kinds of things that we don't consider very important. And what we're into now is, I think, a downward cycle. And I don't think this history assessment itself is evidence of that, because history has been a problem for a long time. I guess what makes me particularly discouraged is there was a point in the early 90s where it appeared that people were finally waking up that we had been ignoring history for a long time, that it had gotten lost, and that it was really important in terms of our ability to be intelligent citizens, our ability to vote for our leaders, our ability to weigh the claims made by politicians when they go on television say something about the past, and you want to be able to say, oh, my God, that was really stupid. They didn't understand. But if you don't know it yourself, you can't even judge them. But there seemed to be a time in the early 90s where states like California and New York and others were saying, history really matters. Let's put it on the front burner. I think what No Child Left Behind did was to take history off the front burner and basically say it didn't matter. But it also says the same about science and the arts and lots of other things. I think that where we're seeing in this latest history assessment, the improvement occurs, let's say, in the lowest performing fourth graders made the greatest gains. Well, I think they're just better able to read because No Child Left Behind did benefit them. Teachers were worried about their getting these low-performing kids to be able to read, and we've seen some gains in the fourth grade reading, and that's why when you look at the questions that the kids are answering, you have to say to yourself, they have no idea who these figures are. They don't know who John Kennedy is, but they can read the question, and they have no idea who that dissident from Myanmar is. I mean, I would bet you there are not 12 fourth graders in the United States who know who the dissident leader from Myanmar is, whose statement they responded to. Said she was advocating for political rights.
Maybe if you said Burma instead of Myanmar.
Well, no. They used her name. I can't pronounce it.
Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yes, okay. They used her name, and then they said she was advocating for political rights. And then the question was, which American document does this remind you of? And the one that had the word rights was the one that half of them selected correctly. But that was just a good reading question.
So you think, for example, the narrowing of racial achievement gaps at all levels that we're seeing black and Hispanics doing better, getting gains in likely reading skills more than really historical knowledge?
Well, there certainly in history, I think that that's true. But I also think that there's part of this narrative that we've heard, like waiting for Superman, and there was a Newsweek cover story a year ago about how our schools were in free fall, that they used to be good a half a century ago, they're no good anymore. This is all ridiculous. And you could actually look at the NAEP scores over the years, not so much in history, but certainly in reading and math, and see that there have been tremendous gains over the years. They slowed down, actually, since No Child Left Behind was adopted. Richard Rothstein, who has looked at this very carefully, put all the scores together and said, good grief, you know, the achievement gap has been reduced on these no-stakes tests. It has been cut in some subjects, in math particularly, in the early grades, has been cut in half. And there were dramatic gains, and others have written about dramatic gains in the 70s and 80s, particularly for black children and Hispanic children. And I think a lot of that was due to, first of all, the end of racial segregation, and secondly, smaller classes. And there could have been other things as well, improving economic opportunity, particularly for black families who had been so terribly oppressed until the end of racial segregation. But, you know, we still have huge income gaps, still have a lot of poverty. It's concentrated amongst minorities. And so I think the educational scores reflect the socioeconomic conditions to some extent. But the larger point is that when you hear the narrative that our schools have gone downhill, it's simply not true. You can't find that evidence in the national assessment scores. In fact, it proves the opposite. We've been on a steady path of improvement that slowed down since the adoption of No Child Left Behind.
Talking with Diane Ravitch, who's with us from New York this morning, research professor of education at NYU and a historian of education, also former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education under President George W. Bush. She was invited by the National Assessments Governing Board to review the results, and we're talking about the lack of historical knowledge among young people, particularly as evidenced by the nation's report card, the National Assessment of Educational Progress released its report. We're going to open up the phone lines shortly. And in fact, if you'd like to join us, you can toll free at 866-733-6786 or by email forum@kqed.org. Or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. I ought to mention that the nonprofit Intercollegiate Studies Institute back in 2007 released a report that less than half of the college students who were queried knew that Yorktown was where the battle was fought that ended the American Revolution, or that NATO was formed to essentially resist Soviet expansion. Don Schwartz is head of the California Council for History Education. That's a statewide organization that promotes and enhances the teaching of history from kindergarten through university education. He's a former high school social studies teacher in the New York City Public Schools, 18 years, and a recently retired professor of history at Cal State University Long Beach, retired last spring, and joins us by phone this morning from Seal Beach, California. Don Schwartz, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, I know there's a great deal of range in terms of the kind of teaching that's done and the methods that are done to teach history. What always has astonished me is how history can be boring to students. I mean, like I remember Gore Vidal saying to me, it must say something about our education system or pedagogy and the way it's presented that students can actually find history boring. But a lot of this, do you think, has to do with teaching to the exams, that it's their least favorite subject, or how much of it has to do with just the fact that teaching to the exams is done?
Well, I think that has a lot to do with it. In my experience of observing the classrooms from K through 12, very often I'll see teachers lecturing and just giving out facts. And you see students, their eyes glaze over. And when I ask teachers, why don't they try to engage students more, pose critical thinking questions? Very often they'll tell me, well, we have to teach to these exams, and we have to cover this material. And unfortunately, the standardized tests very often just emphasize fact recall questions that require memorization rather than interpretation and analysis. And I think that's a good part of the problem.
And your interpretation analysis of this nation's report card, in addition to what you've just said, has to do with what else that we need to know or ought to know?
Well, I think the NAEP test does a better job in requiring knowledge just beyond the recall of facts. A good number of the questions do require comparison, analysis, and interpretation. as far as the results, I think that it's encouraging that minorities are showing some improvement, and I think part of that is because of the Teach American History grants that have given money to school districts that serve largely minority students. These are federal grants that have been around since 2001, and I think we're seeing the benefits of that.
Can you give us a sense of what sort of critical questions that just don't look for facts, I mean, because I know you do workshops on this as well, are really a good test of either the dearth of learning or really how proficient students might be?
Well, for example, there was that question on the NAEP test about what country went along with North Korea in the Korean War. Well, that's a fact recall question. But a more interpretive question might be to explain why the United States participated in the Korean War, or why it was a UN police action rather than a declared war by the United States. So that gets at the reasons for participating in that conflict rather than simply who were the participants.
We heard from Cornelia Orr that the bar is rather high in some respects in the National Assessment of Education Progress Test as opposed to maybe the state level here. Can you maybe help us distinguish or navigate through what is particularly of concern perhaps to Californians or ought to be concerned to Californians as opposed to the national standard?
Well, for example, in California, we have what's called the STAR test that's given every year at grade 8, 10, and 11. And at grade 8, students are tested on what they should have learned in grade 6, 7, and 8. And many of those questions are just, as I mentioned, these kind of fact recall questions. And so that's not a really accurate barometer of what students know about history or should know. And even the NAEP exam is somewhat unfair to California students because in the fourth grade, students in California don't really learn about U.S. history. Yet the NAEP test gives questions on the scope of U.S. history to fourth grade students. So California is a little different in terms of what is covered in the curriculum for U.S. history than the rest of the nation.
I'm wondering also about what has often been politicized as teaching, not only teaching to the test, but also teaching to certain kind of content. Lynn Cheney, former head of the National Endowment of the Humanities, and of course the wife of Dick Cheney, former vice president of the United States, was on this program saying that one of the reasons students did poorly, this is a number of years ago, but one of the reasons students did poorly in tests on the Regents in New York State had to do with the skewing of the content. And she took this as a pretty hard line. In other words, teaching American history more from the standpoint of finding out about slavery and persecution of the Indians and putting people in concentration camps during Second World War of Japanese descent. In other words, that was her line of reasoning. How much do you see that, Don Schwartz, as at all part of this problem?
I don't see that as part of the problem at all. I think that many state curricula are following latest research by historians, and the whole idea of focusing on contributions of minorities and looking at history from not just from the white elite is something that has been dominating historical research for the last 30 or 40 years. I think Lynn Cheney would like to go back to those times when the focus was on presidents and generals and people at the top of the pyramid. That's no longer the total emphasis in history, although, of course, those people are important. But the New York State Regents and other states emphasize minorities and people at the middle and bottom of the pyramid as well. And I don't see that as a factor in how students do on the exams. I think it's important to include those groups in history.
And again, Don Schwartz is head of the California Council for History Education, former high school social studies teacher in the New York City Public Schools. Let's get a caller on. Bill, join us. You're on.
Hi. I'm a history teacher, and I believe one of the reasons that we often fail to engage young people in history is because the history books often leave out the contributions made by young people. For example, you've been talking about the Civil Rights Movement. A lot of people don't know that the Civil Rights Movement basically started when a 16-year-old girl named Barbara Johns outwitted her teachers and her principal in order to organize a student strike that took over the school, shut it down, and created the legal crisis that wound up as Brown versus Board of Education. Now, when you mention this to students, they get a lot more excited about history. But oftentimes we tend to leave that out, and I think there's a reason for that. Pardon me. A lot of teachers kind of worry about including contributions by young people if they even know about them, because most young people who made contributions to history didn't do so by obeying their teachers and being good students. Most of them stood up in some way and became a threat to the establishment. So we tend to leave them out in hopes of not giving the kids ideas, and in the course of that, we tend to not inspire them.
Okay, making history more relevant is really, I think, what you're talking about, or making it relevant to young people in terms of other young
Absolutely.
People. Yeah, thank you, Bill, for that. We're going to go to more of your calls when we return. We're going to continue with Diane Ravitch and Don Schwartz, and we're going to talk to some history teachers. How much does it affect you, do you think, that history is something young people are simply not proficient in, and how much does it affect the future of this country that students seem to be getting an F in their report card, in the national report card, where history is concerned? Join us. 866-733-6786 is our toll-free number, and we do welcome your calls. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the nation's report card, an F for young American students in history at all levels. The National Assessment of Educational Progress, NAEP, released their report showing that the vast majority of students scored below proficiency in American history. Many fourth graders actually failing to recognize a picture of Abraham Lincoln, and critics are saying that history has been shortchanged due to No Child Left Behind and its focus on math and reading scores. How important is history education to you? And should we be worried that It's students' worst subject of 8 subjects that have been tested. We talked earlier with Cornelia Orr, Executive Director of NAEP. And we have Diane Radovich on with us, former Assistant Secretary of Education and Research Professor of Education at NYU. And Don Schwartz, who is head of the California Council for History Education. We're going to go forthwith to your calls, more of them, and your emails and web postings. First, I thought we'd bring in a local teacher. Cliff Baker is an 8th grade American history teacher at St. Paul's Episcopal School in Oakland. St. Paul's is a private school. He's been there 6 years, and before that, he taught in Oakland public schools in the elementary schools. And Cliff Baker, good to have you with us. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, give us a sense of what you think kids should know by the time they're maybe finished with the 5th grade.
Well, by the 5th grade, they should have a good sense of the Age of Exploration. They should have a good sense of the Pilgrims, of Jamestown, of how this country was founded by European settlers. They should have a good sense of the natives who were already living here when the Europeans came over. They should have a good sense of the impact the Europeans had on the native settlements, an idea of disease, conquest, land acquisition. They should have a good idea of why the Revolutionary War was fought, the ideas that came out of the war, the Declaration of Independence, the ideas memorialized in that document. They should have a good idea of the Constitution and the basic framework of our government. And they should have a good idea of the early development of the democracy, basically up till the Civil War. I think as a basis, they should have the idea of these basics of the founding of the nation.
And when you were teaching in the elementary school in Oakland, were you spending too much time on things like math and reading? And
that's a bit of an understatement. It's a little dated. I taught 4th grade in Oakland. It was 8 years ago. Then I taught 5th grade in Castro Valley. But I can tell you, in Oakland, we had a mandated curriculum in the morning. You had to teach open court reading. It's modified a bit since then. But at the time, we had to spend 2.5 hours in the morning doing nothing but a rigid reading curriculum that left no time for anything else. We had lunch. We came back from lunch. We had to spend a minimum of an hour to an hour and a half doing nothing but the math curriculum, very rigid, very formalized. We basically had about an hour a week, and I'm not exaggerating, to do science, social studies, art, PE, everything else, which basically meant we had no time to cover anything. And that was really a shame, because what I always found with kids is they loved history. They loved the stories of American history, and they just weren't getting it. And I found that was a real shame.
Did you feel that the texts were adequate that you had access to, or do you feel still that they are adequate?
No, I find history texts generally tend to be dry. They're not written to the audience, and they do something I call, they cover history, it's a mile wide and an inch deep. You know, they're trying to cram, and your previous guests were talking about this. They're kind of teaching to the test. They're teaching facts without teaching the story behind the facts. And what kids connect to is the story behind the facts. I mean, they want to know why the Boston Massacre happened, the fights that were going on in the streets, you know, the arguments between shopkeepers and British soldiers. They want to know what was said. They want to know what the rioters were yelling at the guards. I mean, that kind of thing. They want the story.
They want the guts of it, so to speak. Huh?
Yeah, they want to connect to it on a human level. You know, these are people doing things. You know, they want to know what the common soldier was doing on the march to Trenton, that he had his feet wrapped in rags, that he was leaving bloody footprints on the snow. They can connect to that. But names and dates and who cares what year the Sugar Act was passed?
Cliff Baker, again, 8th grade American history teacher at St. Paul's Episcopal in Oakland, and before that, taught in the Oakland Public Schools. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
We're going to have more of our callers join us. We're going to go to Chicago. Carly, join us. Hi.
Hi. I am so happy you guys are having this conversation. I'm a university student studying early childhood education, and we're taught to use an integrated approach by teaching all the content areas at the same time. And then also its benefits over teaching to the test. And I was hoping your guests could speak to the disconnect between teacher education programs and how teachers are being required to teach in the public school system.
A good, important question. And Diane Ravitch, can I go to you on this?
Sure. There is a tremendous disconnect because teachers are being prepared in an idealistic way as if the schools are what they were in the past, and you could spend a lot of time on history and social studies and science and the arts. And then when they get into the school, as your previous speaker said, I think it's Mike from Oakland, they will be given a scripted program in reading and a scripted program in math and told that if they don't get those scores up, they may lose their job. They're going to be evaluated 50% of them. I don't know if this is true in California, but state after state has adopted legislation saying 50% of your evaluation will be based on your test scores. And this is creating almost a panic, certainly massive demoralization among teachers, because they come in very idealistic and filled with great ideas about how to make learning fun and engaging and actually get kids to, you know, dig in and care about what they're learning. And then they find out that they're supposed to just be running some kind of an institution that's lockstep and that has all the joy squeezed out of it. We have dreadful textbooks. I had the experience several years ago. I wrote a book called The Language Police, and which I forced myself to read the American history textbooks in all the grades, and they're horrible. I mean, a character like John Kennedy, for example, whom we know to be colorful and dramatic and exciting, and who could really inspire kids to care about history. Most of the U.S. history textbooks give them a paragraph at best, some a couple of sentences, and you have no idea who this guy is or why he was important. And that's why on the, for instance, on the NAEP exam, when they ask about Abraham Lincoln, actually most of the fourth graders recognized his picture, but they couldn't explain why he was important. They didn't know.
Let me thank the caller and go to some of your emails here. Jennifer writes, as someone who went on to major in U.S. history in college, I hated history as a child until 11th grade or so. I blame uninspired textbooks and teaching in addition to the current problems with our education system as a whole. Another listener, Gary, sends from his iPhone, as a student in the 60s, I did badly in history, but well in everything else. As an adult, history fascinates me. History is essentially story, not facts. So history teachers, it seems to me, should be storytellers. I can recall plenty of facts because I have a sense of the emotional flow of the story. Rote memorization simply never sticks. And Karen writes, I wonder if those in other countries who seem to outperform you as students study with the MP3 players on and cell phones nearby. If I had a nickel for every time I had to take a cell phone or an MP3 player away from a student, I'd be a wealthy woman today. No one seems to want to address that issue. And Don Schwartz, here's a student, Linda, who says, California students do not study U.S. history until fifth grade. Why are we testing fourth graders?
Yeah, that was the point that I tried to make about students in California taking the NAEP test at fourth grade when they don't learn American history until the fifth grade.
They study California history, essentially, in the fourth grade, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to get that on again, and let me get some more callers on. We'll go to Oakland. Wes, you're on.
Hi. I run a program called the Jazz and Democracy Project that uses jazz as a lens to get kids to understand what it means to be a part of a democracy. And I think that there's an extra layer to the discussion that we're talking about. It's not always facts versus stories. But even like in all of the standards, you know, I feel like there's not enough emphasis, especially at the early grades, as far as who should you be as a member of a democracy? How should you behave as a member of a democracy? I mean, I teach elementary, middle, and high school, and I have kids on the first day of class who can't even pronounce the word, let alone know how to be a member of a democracy. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. And Diane Ravitch, where do we separate things like we're hearing from Wes, that is citizenship and civics, from historical knowledge or historical understanding, or do we?
Well, here's the thing, and I didn't mention this, but back in a long time ago in the 1980s, late 1980s, I was one of the primary writers of the California history curriculum, and I spent 2 years working with people from across the state, teachers of history, geography, civics, economics, and people from higher education, and we drafted the framework. And that's the framework that's now said that fourth grade would be California history, fifth grade will be the beginnings of U.S. history. And, of course, you know, that's why I think the NAEP framework fourth testing history in fourth grade is silly, because very few kids in the United States have studied any U.S. history in the fourth grade. Most kids are getting state history in the fourth grade. It's not just California. The other point is that at the time we drafted the framework, we talked, as your current caller said, we made it very clear that history is not just about the facts of military conflict and political battles, but it cuts across the life of a people. So that when you study history, you should also be looking at the art. You should be very engaged with civics and human rights. And geography is tremendously important in terms of where do people settle, why do they settle there, what activities do they get involved in, how does it shape the life of a people to be located here and not there. All these things are interrelated. And
well, so, forgive me, does that mean a more interdisciplinary curriculum then?
Yeah, it is more interdisciplinary, but history doesn't get lost. And, you know, I don't want to – I'm very clear. The facts are important. You have to know that why we got involved in World War I, which was probably one of the stupidest wars ever fought in human history, but also understand what the consequences of the Civil War were. Why did we pass the amendments to the Constitution that now became the basis of the Brown decision? Why is the Brown decision so important? These are not just facts. Every time we mention a fact, we're talking about a lot of ideas and concepts that have shaped our country and shaped the language that we use to talk about our rights. So, yeah, all of this stuff is interrelated, going back to another caller, a teacher, what turns students on are the great stories. And we were emphatic about that, too. History can't just be a recitation and rote memorization of the facts. It has to be the stories about how people have struggled and died, sometimes to do the right thing, sometimes to do the wrong thing. But it's those stories that get the kids connected and make them really get excited and go to the Internet and say, I want to learn more.
Well, Diane Ravitch, here's a listener, and I'm curious to get your response to her comment. Amy, who writes, I was a history major in college, so don't get me wrong. I love the study of history and think it is very important, and I am critical of No Child Left Behind. But if students cannot read the questions, then I think it is essential to primarily focus on reading and math, the basics. For all of its faults, at least No Child Left Behind and the California teaching standards are doing something right, ensuring that our children can read.
Well, I would say that reading's terribly important, but No Child Left Behind has in fact created a regime of standardized testing that ends up robbing every other subject and not even teaching kids to read all that well. The improvements in reading have been very small. We've now had No Child Left Behind for 10 years, and we have created a massive testing industry. The testing industry has benefited from No Child Left Behind. Plus a whole world of consultants. We now have, I think the act should be renamed No Consultant Left Behind. We're spending billions on testing. I know that California is spending probably $200 million a year or has been on testing. And this is not, that money should be going into instruction. Reading is fundamental, but you got to get beyond reading. And one way to get kids engaged is to get them involved in history and science and all of in the arts. All of these things are being lost. There are schools across California that have not had an arts teacher in years, not had any music in years. And kids have to have a reason to come to school other than to be tested.
Talking with Diane Ravitch, who is former Assistant Secretary for Education in the Bush Administration and Research Professor of Education at New York University. And Martin, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, the Civil War was recently mentioned, and in my class where I have Chinese Americans and Nicaraguans and Vietnamese, when you say Civil War, they all get something in their head that happened to their family in their parents' lifetime or their grandparents, and none of them involves U.S. Grant. To what extent is that part of the problem?
What do you think about that, Don Schwartz?
Well, we certainly have an increasingly diverse population, and I think one of the challenges of teaching history is to also teach civics and to make comparisons between our system and the historical experiences of the students of the countries that they come from. So I think that's really an opportunity for teachers to make those comparisons, and I think that would enlighten students from other cultures to American history and American culture.
Let me thank the caller. I want to go to more of your calls here, and let's go to Hugh in Oakland. Hugh, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for the discussion. Fifth grade teacher, Jen Bruhard, at Glenview Elementary was selected as California Teacher, History Teacher of the Year last year. And besides her integration of history into the rest of her programs, some of the teachers who are on prior grades, for example, our first grader integrate history and geography into their more strict curriculums. And if you can do that integration, it greatly interests, just to tie some of the other comments into this, it helps the kids become more interested in learning to read and other academic programs. For example, the first grade teachers from Venezuela, and that helps link the international parts and make it more interesting.
Oh, thank you so much for those remarks, Hugh. Good to hear from you. And Kevin just ferried in something from Jaywalker, a magazine, which says a quick search on the internet repeatedly bumps into the famous George Santayana quote, "Those who do not remember the past are doomed to repeat it." Yet the net contradictorily informs us that he actually said those who cannot remember the past are doomed to repeat it. Not to miss any angle, the misinformation superhighway quotes poor, tired old George as having said those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. Of course, cyberspace has a few other versions of this quote that offer condemnation instead of doom, such as those who forget history are condemned to repeat it, and those who don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it. Finally, for the historically unaware, the digital world serves up, quote, "those who are ignorant of history are condemned to repeat it." So there are three things I've learned from this. This is John Kazing of Jaywalker. One, those who don't learn from history are condemned to write web pages about it. Two, those who cannot come up with quotes of their own are condemned to repeat them. And three, those who do not remember the past are doomed to misquote it. Let me go. Let me go to more calls here. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, all the lines are full, but you can join us by email, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And I think, Cliff Baker, you're still with us, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I thought I'd said goodbye to you. I'm sorry. I'm glad you're here. Cliff Baker, again, is an eighth grade American history teacher at St. Paul's Episcopal School in Oakland, and St. Paul's a private school. He's been there 6 years. Before that, taught in the Oakland Public School elementary school system. So are kids in California maybe getting perhaps a more raw deal by all this concentration in the fourth grade on California history when you've got national tests that are looking at things from a completely different vantage point?
No, they're not getting a raw deal because, I mean, really, what does that test matter? I mean, the kids are learning about California history. It's local. It's relevant. It's important to them.
But that's the national expectation. That's essentially what we're talking about as the measurement here.
I agree, but I have to agree with Diane. I don't really see what the point of that is. You know, so what if they're not getting it in fourth grade? They're getting it in fifth grade. Maybe they should just start giving the test in fifth grade instead of fourth grade. I mean, that's the problem with these national standards. I think it's important that kids get California history. I know in fourth grade a lot of kids go up to Columbia. They do a whole gold rush visit there. I mean, it makes it real to them. Again, that's part of the story of history, and I think they can connect to it better, and they enjoy it, and they remember it. You know, so what that they're not getting it in fourth grade? It's perfectly fine they get it in fifth.
Well, the NAEP test showed, Diane Ravitch, that students, they did worse in history, but they did best in economics, and we live in a global economy. Can't U.S. history perhaps be or ought not to be more tied to something like global economics?
No, actually, one of my criticisms of the current rhetoric about education, which, first of all, let me say I didn't work for George W. Bush. I worked for his father. But the current rhetoric coming from Washington, coming from President Obama, coming from the GOP and the Chamber of Commerce is we're preparing students to be economically competitive in a global economy. That's true, but we're also preparing them to be American citizens. And we're preparing them to take on the responsibility of maintaining our democracy, of being prepared to vote, make wise decisions, to serve on juries and make decisions affecting people's lives, and to sustain this society that we have with all of our rights, responsibilities, freedoms. And we've forgotten about that. It's all now economic competitiveness, and so we talk about that being college-ready and career-ready, but nobody talks anymore about being citizenship-ready, are just ready to be a good person. I mean, the whole issue, we used to talk a lot about how teachers affected things like character and set standards for responsibility and integrity and how you deal with your fellow human beings. All of that's out the window. It's all now global competitiveness. So I think that the really most important goals of schools are being forgotten for one reason only, and that's because we don't know how to measure them. And we never will be able to measure them. And so what we see going on across the country, which I think is frankly disgusting, is schools closing. I know they've closed in Los Angeles. They've closed in many communities across California. We see the spread of for-profit industry moving into education. We see virtual charters, for-profit charters, coming into different states and making millions. And it's, you know, the global economic competitiveness is now moving into education big time, and history is not going to be one of their priorities. Their priority will be test scores in reading and math and squeezing money out of the state to benefit their shareholders. So this is the frightening part of it, and you need to have some historical knowledge for this reason. First of all, to protect yourself, to protect your society, but also just to not have amnesia. The person who has no historical knowledge is like a babe in the woods. They're politically an amnesiac, and that's that allows all sorts of people with money and power to manipulate them.
And we'll go to a couple of emails here from listeners who have strong opinions. Beth says, I'm a junior at UCSC, minoring in history. It's been my experience that sciences and math get much more funding than humanities in universities. Moreover, in primary education, math and science appear to be a higher priority than history. Perhaps if institutions gave the humanities a higher priority, children would be more engaged. Lisa says, one more reason we homeschool. We spend all the time we want on history. We play games, make period crafts, read historical fiction and nonfiction. My kids are 9 and 11. They both love history. I had an amazing history teacher who played games with us to make it more exciting. You don't see this in classrooms these days. We'll get a caller on from Murata. Nancy, join us. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to point out one of the things that I've noticed. I've taught middle school for a number of years as a resource teacher here in the Bay Area, as well as including Oakland. And one thing that I've noticed over and over again is that students, while they're taught for many years how to read, which is just straight decoding, they're not taught how to read area content, which is a textbook. And especially for second language learners, a student might be conversationally, they might understand conversational English and be able to understand fiction, but reading a textbook is completely different. And I have never seen a school systematically teach students how to, you know, take apart a textbook and really understand what they're reading and how to put it in their memory so that they can recall it later.
What do you think about that, Cliff Baker, teaching students how to read textbooks? Reading textbooks kind of a particular craft on its own, unto its own?
It is, and that's a critical point. And you know, we talk a lot about how we focus on reading and learning how to read to take the test. Well, my complaint was always, you've got a textbook. Teach the kids how to read the textbook. It's all part of learning how to read. It's a different kind of reading because, as the caller just said, it's nonfiction, and I think that is a skill you can teach. Why not use history as what you're reading to learn how to read? Then you can kill two birds with one stone.
And I think there's an argument to be made for the fact that they're almost different languages when we're talking about textbooks of science as opposed to textbooks of history and the like, and they involve different reading skills. Let me get some more of your calls on. Martha joins us next. Martha, thanks for waiting.
Good morning. I'm calling. My daughter is a teacher at Our Lady of Grace in Castro Valley, and she teaches the history in all subjects and other subjects. But what she does with the history is the children pick out which president they want to be, and after this is all done, they have a play and a presentation, and they dress up like the presidents, and they know, you know, state when they were born, what year, and when they lived, what the president was famous for, and the kids love it.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Appreciate all the information and all the responses we're getting from you, our listeners. In fact, a lot of web comments. And by the way, you can continue this conversation on our website, kqed.org/forum, by clicking on this segment. Let me just read some of those. This is Joe who says, teachers are having kids dress up like pilgrims and calling it a history lesson. The fact is that there is too much focus on making it fun and no emphasis at all on the broad dynamics of why things happen. I have 5 kids in California public education, and even though they attend the best schools in the state, Los Gatos and UCSB, I'm disappointed in the tendency to teach facts instead of important dynamics. Kathy writes, what incentive do students have to do well on this test? I recall one test a few years ago where high school students were asked to name the shortest route from the Mediterranean Sea to the Indian Ocean. A surprising number answered I-95. Was this ignorance or a sense of humor? And Chris in Napa says, another issue here is whose version of history are we to teach? In Texas, they have rewritten the curriculum to reflect an extremely conservative version. Here, we are rewriting it to reflect the contribution of gays. Diane Ravitch, want to comment on that?
Oh, yeah, because I mentioned that I wrote a book in 2003 called The Language Police, and what it was about was the censorship of textbooks, and the two states that are the fulcrum of controlling the content of textbooks are Texas and California. So in Texas, you have the conservative censorship, and California, you have people saying you have to have equal representation of all groups and so forth. And the textbook publishers respond to all of this by developing guidelines of words you're not allowed to use, stereotypes, you can't show anybody looking stereotypically like an old person with a walker would be a stereotype. So you would never portray an old person with a walker or an old person looking feeble, because old people never get old. I mean, it's all kinds of weird stuff about what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say. And it's part of what makes history textbooks so boring, because in California, as in every other state, all the interest groups, all the ethnic groups, everyone with an axe to grind gets a chance to review the content of the textbook and to say, you're not allowed to say that about me. And so it gets taken out. And what students end up with in their hands is a 7-pound book, 40% of which is irrelevant graphics, and the remaining 60% has been so cleansed of any controversy that it's boring. So learning to read a textbook is really not very good learning. What kids, I think, should be more exposed to would be biographies, accounts of fictional event, not fictional, but nonfiction histories, real stories written about real events by real authors who are not afraid to use language that someone might say is, I'm not talking about curse words, I'm just saying referring to the roles of whatever was done, telling the truth about history, giving different accounts of the same event so that kids can compare them and make their own judgments.
Let me ask our 8th grade teacher, Cliff Baker, has that been your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is important for kids to learn to read textbooks simply because that's what they're going to be doing through middle school and high school. I think it's a skill they should learn. I agree with Diane, they're terribly written, and secondary sources and primary sources are much better for the kids to read. But I think you can use the textbook as a jumping-off point. I think if kids learn to read it and pull the basic facts, you can then use that to go deeper into the bare mention that the textbook's making and pull the story and pull what's going to drag the kids in and make those facts relevant and interesting, and also help them use it to analyze other historical trends. I mean, that's really what we want to do, is get these kids to think, right, not just recite facts.
We certainly do want to get them to think, and if you're still thinking about this, you can continue the conversation on our website, going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. Thanks to Cliff Baker, who's been with us this segment, and Don Schwartz, the head of the California Council for History Education, and Diane Ravitch, research professor of education at NYU and a historian of education. And we spoke earlier with Cornelia Orr, executive director of NAEP. Thank you, our listeners. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Amy Machado and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.